Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
What would your life look like if you spent 30 years at sea, facing danger, loss, and conditions most people could never imagine? For Kyle J. Matthews, what started out as a childhood fascination with fishing boats turned into a lifetime of survival in one of the toughest industries in the world, commercial fishing. In his powerful memoir, The Sea Slave, A True Story, Kyle shares what life is really like out there, where the captain's law rules, where many don't make it back, and where the line between normal and inhumane can disappear. But this story goes far beyond the ocean. It's about trauma, the weight of the past, and what it takes to finally confront it. After years of carrying those experiences, Kyle was pushed to face his story head-on, leading him to something he never expected: faith, forgiveness, and a chance at redemption. More than a story about the sea, it's a story about survival and what comes after. It's the gripping memoir of Kyle J. Matthews, and he's our guest on This Week in America. Kyle, welcome to the program. I love the location. You are. Tell us where you're at today, because it's a beautiful, beautiful picture.
I'm in Boston Harbor. That's the tea party. They actually have tours where you can throw fake boxes of tea over and pull them back aboard.
That's fascinating. And if the video version, go to YouTube or go to our website and pull up videos and you'll see that. Beautiful chat outdoors today. Kyle is our guest on the program today. We're talking about the book 30 Years at Sea, how we spent that and what he went through. Let's talk about where this all started for you. I mentioned that as a child, the childhood fascination with fishing boats. Talk about that, and then we'll transform that into actually this dream coming true. What was it like? Why did that fascinate you, seeing these boats taking off and going out to sea?
That little boy, that casual glance as a little boy, impacted my life in ways I never imagined. You know, I grew up with a brook in back of the house, trout fishing and cat fishing, and my father was a reading teacher. He told me, make your advocation your vocation. So I did.
Well, it's interesting. From that came the experience of actually being a commercial fisherman. Let's go ahead to 1986. You talk about this in the book and say it's something you will never forget. The dead of winter, you're at Friendly's having lunch. I love Friendly's. There's one in the area. There aren't too many down in the Southeast anymore.
No.
You're there for lunch. Jimmy is buying. He's been out on the boat. He's got a wad of cash, and that led to your first job on a boat on the water. Talk about that! And
yes,
I love the excitement. I can sense the excitement in your writing. You're jumping out of the booth at Friendly's. Can't wait to get a hold of this guy for your big opportunity. What was that like, and how did that unfold?
I was a proud moment for me. You know, I think it being going to be 59 this year, you want to fill the full circle. I think deep down, we're meant to climb mountains and conquer things. And it was a challenge, and I like the challenge.
Well, you go home, and your mother's excited, encouraging you. Your father was like, I told you, make that a vocation and go out and get an avocation and go out and get a job. Yeah, and we'll talk about your dad later and how he finally came around and read the book with tears in his eyes and said, this is a book that needs to be published. You had to get gear. You didn't have the cold weather gear. You had to get gear. And talk about getting that first job and going out to sea that very first time. I mean, this is living a childhood dream. What was that like when it finally happened? Sleepless nights, waiting in the middle of the night, you get out to go out on this journey. What was the anticipation like, and what was it like when you finally pulled out to sea?
I had butterflies the night. I remember the night before.
Oh yes,
and the anticipation was like Heinz ketchup. I got to the boat. I didn't know what to expect, and believe me, it was exciting.
What a remarkable time. And you will find this in Kyle's book. The book is available wherever books are sold. The Sea Slave, A True Story. His website is authorkylematthews.com. When you think back that very first day, the first days that you were out at sea, what's a moment that made you realize this was more than an adventure? It was something far more dangerous and life-changing. There had to be a reality moment when it's like, okay, I've got to get over the excitement now, because if I screw up, well, I could lose my life, or somebody else could lose theirs.
I think I put my book, I do remember, when we were younger, we had no fear when we were younger.
Yes.
And that had a lot of play in it, because I saw a man that was my first trip, primordial, screaming with his arms sprawled out, "We're going to die." And I didn't, the captain told me to tell him to shut the F up with his screaming. But what I saw was a man with fear in his eyes, like he thought he was going to die. I didn't feel that then at 18. I didn't think of it. It's amazing.
Was there a point when you started to take that into consideration when you saw, and you mentioned all of your friends that you had in the 30-year career ended up not making it back? Was there a point when that really hit home with you that this is tough?
Well, 1987, yes, I was 18. Gee. we hit a storm so bad, it blew through three bulletproof Lanex windows out. The wave break is meant to deflect the wave. It flattened the steel, flattened it to the starboard side. The sea was so big, it stalled the 3408 Caterpillar engine. And if it was nighttime, the captain would have been decapitated.
Mm.
We had 4 feet of water in the galley. And a case of bands that bans 5,000 pounds of lobster. You can't compress a liquid. The Lanex glass was embedded in the teak mahogany so hard that it couldn't pull it out with a pair of pliers. You can't compress a liquid. All the bands broke up. We couldn't open up the builds in the fish hole because the bands would have clogged the build. So a 5-gallon bucket. Oh, boy.
Well, yeah, when we watch on television, and by the way, that you, Kyle, was in the one of the series of Discovery Channel's Lobster Wars, we watch these shows and we get caught up in this. And part of you is like, that's a real experience. That would really be something fascinating. Talk about, we mentioned the physical qualities necessary. Emotionally, what is there a toll that takes on you? Being out for so many
wow.
days in a row?
Yeah, I've seen it tear me into pieces. Tore me to pieces. I'm not going to lie. I'm in the brutal honesty, unless it's going to hurt or harm somebody. Yeah. It'll make you or break you.
How do you deal with that?
You know, I mean, you find out, you know what, without food, without water, and without sleep introduces a man to himself or herself. You find out who you are and what the F you're made of real quick.
Yeah, and if you don't, you suffer the consequences for that. We see,
unfortunately, you do.
The lack of regulation for commercial fishing, it sort of seems like everybody does what's necessary.
Like, regulations. They start blowing, working the 50-mile-an-hour winds. And I was in the Gulf of Maine. They call it the Gulf of Pain, 20, 30-foot seas. They stopped working that because one man died. The lobster boat took such a pitch, they don't paint the rails. It's a rusty rail. So when the boat took a pitch, the stack of gear crushed him, and he took a walk he got up and walked to the wheelhouse. He died instantly. His insides were cut up. And then they toned it down a notch. You know?
How do you deal with that and then continue to be a commercial fisherman? Were there times when you saw that?
Well, the first 10 years, I was in a fetal position, suck on my thumb, scared.
I can believe that.
The last 22 decades, I was primordial screaming, "I'm too miserable to die," putting my butt 1365 Dexter knife carbon blade, because carbon, you can put fat and edge faster on it than steel, put the butt handle in my mouth and spread my arms out ready for anything. And I saw that when I was a kid. Mike Ginley named his kid after me. And this is a kid, I looked at somebody up like Rough and Tumble. I put my book. I looked up to somebody who was Rough and Tumble, and that's what I became.
And this all unfolds in Kyle's book, The Sea Slave. The book is available wherever books are sold. All of the information and much more on Kyle's website, Kyle J. Matthews. His website is author, KyleMatthews.com. A link to his website and book on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. I mentioned in the beginning the concept of the captain's law. That really is the law of the, I was going to say the law of the land, the law of the sea, isn't it? I mean, what the captain says, that goes whether you agree or disagree.
I was taught my first trip, Sarge, he was a Vietnam vet, he was a sergeant in Vietnam War. He turned around, he was on deck, first mate, and he turned around, I said something to the captain, he pointed at the moon, he said, if the captain says that moon's green, it's the moon's green. And whatever said in the boat stays in the boat. I remember the first two things, and he looked at me and he said, you're a mile away from land. I said, really? He goes, yeah. Down. So I got the point pretty quick.
Oh, but yes. The book is it just captures all of what goes on out there, and we only see a bit of it when we watch the reality programs on television.
Yeah, I mean, I had one boat owner say that it was some captains think they're God.
Yes.
It's true. You're out there 1,500 miles, a sword fisherman. I go 180 nautical miles east, southeast, east of Nantucket Island. One nautical mile is a little bit over 1 mile an hour because they go compensate. Me out 1,500 miles sword fishing. Guys, no green card. I know one guy out there. He told him to take 800-pound test mark. You're supposed to let the line clear under the boat. And then when it's clear, you say clear. But the 800-pound test mono got in the wheel. He got over the lot here. Put that line, wrap that line around your hand. He wrapped it around his hand. Then he put it in gear, brought him to the rail, potted it, and broke his hand. I said, what did he say after that, Captain? It worked for the man for 10 years. He got on his knees. His eyes were like water sprinkles. And he goes, I'm an asshole. 1,500 miles. He had no green card. What are you going to do?
What are you going to do? Just... these stories come to life in the book, The Sea Slave.
In the book. I don't lie. I mean,
You're
very brutal honesty unless it's going to hurt or harm somebody.
Honesty.
Families, I respect the families and left that alone.
What makes
and,
this
and
book...
And that's out of respect out of the families, and you can understand that.
This book is so impressive because it is the brutal, honest truth. I mean, this tells it all. And let's transition this when you start dealing with trauma. When does that start take a toll, and was there a moment when you realized, I need help?
Yeah, you always want to fill that circle in your life, and I'm doing it. The book helped me do that. And, in life, I kept going through this because maybe this book can help other people. Because sometimes in life, I told Logan Crawford on a TV show, I said, when you had too much in life, and you just want to sprinkle some primordial screaming on top of it. And I said, I almost lost my cool.
Yes.
It'll help people get through it. I lost my wife, died, my mother, my father, my dog died 8 years ago. I read the Bible 7 months. It got me through it. I got my book published 2025. I was in first class 12 times last year. Only kicked out of first class twice. No drinking. I don't drink. I'm in a program. I don't care. Who knows?
How difficult of a journey was that to go from what you went through to begin the process to heal, to deal with you went through, and to get the redemption and get where you are today.
I was told out in Salt Lake City by some lady, I have to be brave enough to face my emotions. And I had to. The program's 10%. You know what 90% of it was? Healing. Healing. I had to forgive myself, forgive my father, forgive my captains. I made one first trip to my book. My first trip, this captain was so miserable, they wanted me to kill him on the way out. I'm not kidding.
I mean, it's a remarkable story.
He was not a happy camper, that captain.
From the anticipation that Kyle had as he was getting ready for this first trip and to see all of the trauma that he went through, the survival that he had to go through, what was it that ended it for you? What was it at the end of 30-plus years that you decided, I need to move on, I can't do this anymore?
Well, November 1st, 2018, I get permanently injured. a fiberglass ladder snap. You know, a rib of a boat? Well, I fell far in the fetal position right below my right butt cheek. If that I-beam wasn't on the rib, it would have been a guillotine, rusty guillotine backwards. So I'm lucky I got a leg. I was in cane incontinence, mild incontinence for a little over a year. I went to a track. I timed it four times. The physical therapy was a mile. It was a mile and a half. I thought it was a mile. I walked in back. The doctor said it'd be in a cane for the rest of my, you know, long. And I told him I worked 18, 20-hour days. I was embarrassed to tell people I worked slavery days. And they both looked at each other and said, oh, that's why. I walk with a gimp.
Yes.
Hey, I'll take the gimp all day. Right? I'm lucky. 30 years, I'm lucky enough to be sitting here talking to you.
And you look in great shape. You really do. Talk about that and staying in the shape.
Yeah, it was a lot of work, 18, 20-hour days over 30 years.
Yes.
And then the storm coming, we got the record. We worked 3 days around the clock, still get the butt kicked out of you from the storm anyways. I don't know.
How long were you out at sea on a normal trip? How many
10
days?
10 to 12 days in for 2 to 3. 10 to 12 in for 2 to 3, depending on weather. One captain figured out we averaged 8 months out to sea a year, and I gave him the finger because now I know how much I spent out to sea.
Wow, that's incredible. And
the better part of 8 months a year, over 30. And my daughter said, Dad, that's over. I said, 60, that's 30 years. Over 30. I stopped counting. I was getting depressed. And she goes, that's over half your life. I said, thanks, daughter. She's like me, brutal honesty. I love it.
It's just...
But it made me appreciate life, land, birds, bees, trees, and it'll never go away. It's like I feel like a kid in a candy store with a $100 bill when I go to Boston.
Well, you're out in the harbor today, and you haven't stopped smiling since you've been out there. It's a beautiful day, and you can enjoy this.
My late wife, I used to get really antsy in land. And let me put it this way. I got lost in my own neighborhood. She cried that night. She realized how much time I spent out there.
Wow.
That's pretty crazy, right?
Talk about, you mentioned slave conditions, working conditions. Did you make any money doing this? Is it possible to make money, decent money?
I started off at salary, $325 a week a trip. It was greenhorns, four guys on deck and one greenhorn. To keep the shears hard, to get rid of the greenhorn. But I kept coming back to the point where the guy named his kid after me. It's pretty brutal what I went through. But it made me who I am today.
Well, and you're able to take this and to help other people. And that's sort of, it's interesting reading the stories, what you went through, what life is really like as a commercial fisherman. But then how you dealt with this trauma and how you turned your life around and you're helping other people
exactly.
Do that. Talk about forgiveness.
I beat it and got ahead.
Well, yes, and you're sharing that message, and you talked on this before. It's so important, the power of forgiveness. Talk about that and forgiving yourself and forgiving other people. How important was that in your transformation?
For me to move on. The only way for me to move on. Only way. I lived a lonely road. Well, I walked a lonely road, the only one I knew.
And you've learned from that in sharing with that faith, forgiveness, a chance at redemption. You mentioned reading the Bible. How important has faith been in this journey to reclaim your life?
Well, I had to dig deep into the bowels of my soul to get this. And I did it for my two children, two surviving children. I can go to my grave happy. But I realized going through this book, I realized I can help somebody else. Can help somebody else, so be it.
And you continue to do that, not only with the book, but in real life as well. Talk about that. You deal with homeless people. You deal with people that are down and out and really need to turn their lives around.
I sold my life for a dream. I had no friends, no media, no nothing 7 years now. And all my friends, I'm a Christian. I tithe. And all my friends are homeless shelter and homeless in the train station in Boston, Ed, Sean. And I help them. Ed needs vitamins. I'll bring him vitamins. It's only temporary. There's a lot of just situations they get in. Ed doesn't, you know, he doesn't have any drug problems. He's just in a situation. And the Bible taught me you edify people, bring up spirits instead of tearing them down. I'm bringing a homeless guy from Salt Lake City. He's been walking around the streets for 15 years in Utah. I'm going back July 1st. That was the last year, 2 months. And the Mormons won't help him. I don't know why. They're nice people, but he's walking around the streets. You're younger than me. He's not addicted. He's the only one not addicted to drugs and alcohol. He's institutionalized in the streets. A couple hundred bucks. And you want to be homeless in the United States, you want to be in Massachusetts. And I'm bringing him back here August, end of August. I'm going out there for a month in August 1st, I'm bringing him back here.
Well, it's such a remarkable job that you're doing. People you don't know that will read the book and will be impressed. And the ones like you're mentioning in Utah that will be coming back with you to Massachusetts. I want to wrap up with your dad's story. He was, I will say, skeptical. That's probably putting it kindly with your chosen occupation. Talk about your dad. I mean, he was an educator. You give him a rough copy of your book, and he really was impressed with what you had done.
In the end, yeah, he was. He said to put his feet in my shoes. He was scared to put his feet in my shoes. My paycheck was a roll of the dice. You get a job with the government, food, and he's right. Well, my paycheck was a roll of the dice. I didn't know what I was going to make. Oh boy.
When you decided to get help, how difficult was that? You see so many people that struggle, but they really don't want to go to a mental health professional. They really don't want to open up and share the story, particularly with strangers. How difficult was that for you to reach out for help, to get the advice, the guidance that you needed to change your life?
I was crippled in pain. Crippled in pain. I hit, you know, I lost my mother, but my wife, my mother, my father, my dog died. I mean, I lost my identity, injured for the first time, my permanently living on land first. I had seven things on my plate. Even the therapist asked me how I got through it. I said, all these self-help books come from Proverbs. My pastor read the Bible 40 times. I went through it in 7 months with him. Got me through everything. I published my book, and here I am.
Well, smiling and helping people and looking great as you approach life and helping people. How difficult was it for you to write the book? Because as I mentioned before, and you talked about it, brutally honest as you're telling stories, how difficult was it to go back and to relive high moments and the many low moments?
It was brutal. I had to dig, like I said, I had to dig deep in the bowels of my soul, but I did it for my two surviving children. And it wasn't easy at all. But I did it.
Did it help to write?
I found out after I published it, less than 3% of people in the whole world publish a true story. I didn't realize that.
I didn't either. Interesting statistic. Did you feel?
I know.
Did you feel better after writing? Did it help you in writing the book?
Yes. Everybody even said after I wrote it, I was another man, another person. It was out of here.
Yes.
They say it's good to journal. It's good to write down. Get it out of your head. Get it out of your chest, whatever it is.
What is it like now as you're out talking about the book and doing the interviews and the book signings? What's it like now? Is it difficult talking about it, or is it part of the recovery?
No, I hit a lot of people, hit a lot of nerves. People come to me. There's a blog on my website, ask questions, and I identify. People identify with me. I like that.
You mentioned the website. There's a lot there, information. You can order the book there as well, but a lot more than that, and you can reach out to Kyle. It's authorkylematthews.com. We have that link in the Amazon link on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. You can reach out, get all the information on the book there as well. What's the future hold for you? You did a remarkable job in writing this book and really taking your story and making it relatable. Are you working on something else?
Believe it or not, I was thinking, my father always said you're going to reach your children. Thinking about a children's book. You know, but the second trailer on my Discovery Lobster Channel 2007, the producer Alaskan King Crab Show was in our boat. He said 80% of people of that show are inland. And it's true. I went out Salt Lake City. People never seen the ocean. You know, I'm thinking of making a big circle around the United States: Colorado, Kansas, Arkansas, South Dakota, North Dakota, Wyoming, Montana, back to Salt Lake City. 2,700-mile circle around the United States. I've been on the sea my whole life, and what else do I got to lose?
Well, that's interesting how you can share that story and continuing to get the word out there. It's a remarkable job with the book. The book is The Sea Slave, A True Story. Mentioned before the in the movie The Perfect Storm, Mark Gimli, I think, am I saying that correctly?
Yeah, he married, he and aboard the sister ship of Andrea Gill. He named his kid after me. So the owner of the boats in the Perfect Storm's grandson's named after me.
That's an amazing story. I was reading that. It was like, wow, that's just one incredible
Well, they're all
aspect.
to pay for that price.
Yeah, when you think about it, that came with a cost, and you paid that.
Never did.
It's just a remarkable story. You're taking your life and using it to help people. And Kyle, it's been a pleasure having you on the program. Loved having the chance to talk about the book, The Sea Slave, A True Story, and you'll find it wherever books are sold. Thank you for taking the time to share it, and I really thank you for having such a beautiful day in Boston today at the Harbor that you could do this outdoors.
It
That
is.
looks great. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you for helping my kids. Thank you, everyone. I mean it.
Well, this helps everybody. The book is so well written. The Sea Slave, A True Story, Kyle Matthews. His website is authorkylematthews.com. More than just a website about the book, it's information on Kyle, and he said he's got the blog there, and you can reach out. All of that on his website. Links on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. You can listen to our program and all of them on 28 podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeart, and more. Available on YouTube, where you'll see this video, Facebook, LinkedIn, and beyond. While there, like, comment, and hopefully subscribe. This Week in America, we thank you for joining us on the program and follow us on all the different platforms.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.